The power of a song we shall overcome is hard to put into words. It's been sung the world over under threat of violence. It's been sung to bring courage and hope and faith, sometimes by a single voice, sometimes by hundreds. And it became the anthem of the civil rights movement. Now, singer-songwriter Stuart Stotz has written a biography of the song. It's called We Shall Overcome, A Song That Changed the World. He told Anne Strainchamps that it was his father who first got him interested in the history.
He took me to civil rights rallies when I was a child and was also a civil rights activist himself. And in the book, I tell the story about how he, as a young professor at McCormick Theological Seminary, went down to South Carolina, I believe it was. He didn't remember, actually, when I asked him later. And in support of a young black intern who had been arrested on the steps of the courthouse back in 1963 for singing the song, We Shall Overcome, that was declared illegal. And so they brought in people from out of town. And when he told me that story, I started to think about what other song had been so closely associated with social change. And although you can think of others, that one seemed to me to stick out, in part because it does move beyond the civil rights movement. And it wasn't just an anthem. It was a hope and courage giver, too.
But it pretty much became the unofficial anthem of the civil rights movement.
That's
and
right.
Then went on and became an important song in the anti-war protests in Vietnam. It became an important song for labor movement struggles.
That's right.
It's been part of protest struggles for most of this century.
That's right. It actually began more as a labor anthem and then became part of the civil rights movement later. And then, for example, the protesters at Tiananmen Square, some of them were wearing T-shirts that said, "We shall overcome," as they faced the tanks.
Well, you did this wonderful thing in your new book. You're basically telling the biography of a song, where it came from and key moments in its life. Where does this song come from in the first place?
Like any folk song, which it is in some ways, it's very difficult to pull out one moment. It's not like Lennon and McCartney sitting in a room and you can say, there, that song was born at that time. Clearly, it has roots in some of the old spiritual songs. The song I'll Be All Right, for example, has very similar sort of structure and feeling to it. There's also a hymn by Charles Tenley, a minister around 1900, who wrote a song called I Will Overcome. But whether that really had anything to do with the genesis of the song, no one can say for sure, because the tradition is that, in part, people create songs spontaneously and change them and adapt them to the moment and the needs of a situation. Nevertheless, there is a history that it came through the Highlander Center, which was a labor and a later civil rights sort of organizing retreat center. And Pete Seeger heard it, and it went out west, where it came through Frank Hamilton and Guy Carawan, who each added a little bit, and then it came back to the Highlander Center. And at that point, it was still not famous, but it did become this anthem that we're talking about. Then at the organizing meeting, it was 1960, but I may have that date wrong. But anyway, that was when people sort of grabbed onto it, and it took off.
Was there a moment, a kind of debut moment for the song, its first key performance?
Guy Carawan was a folk singer down at the Highlander Center, and they led a lot of retreats on the weekends for people who were involved in social change around the South. Among other people, Rosa Parks went through the Highlander Center before she did her, famous action. So the people were coming through there, talking with other people about how to organize and so on. And Guy Carawan was leading the songs, lots of songs, and including this song. And then several weeks later, at this initial organizing conference, one of the people there turned to Guy and said, "Hey, Guy, play that Overcome song." And he played it, and the story is that people spontaneously stood and sang with their arms crossed, as we see in so many of the pictures. And in their words, from that day on, that was the song.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday.
And you tell a wonderful wonderful story also about the first time Martin Luther King Jr. heard it.
Right. Before, it was at the at an anniversary of the Highlander Center, and it was not the famous song at that point, but it was sung there. I think probably there it was sung by Pete Seeger. And on the way, as he was being driven to another engagement later on, he's sitting in the back kind of humming, saying, well, that We Shall Overcome, something that kind of sticks with you about that, isn't there? You know, it's fascinating to me that this song would sort of bubble up.
There's a little song that we sing in our movement down in the South. I don't know if you've heard it, but it has become the theme song. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I've joined hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome.
He was right, wasn't he, Martin Luther King Jr., when he said there's something about that song that sticks with you. But you're a songwriter and a singer. What is it about that song that sticks with you, that made it the one that everybody turned to again and again?
You know, there's an element of mystery in that. If there were a simple answer, then we could write another one like it. But having said that, there is something about the tempo. Originally, it was a song kind of in two, dun, dun, dun. And Frank Hamilton apparently added sort of this dun, 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 which gives it this forward motion. It's kind of a Motown beat, actually. So that's part of it. But of course, lots of songs have that. The repetition in the song allows people to learn it very quickly. And the way that people can add to it, again, as the situation demands, I think it's also the fact that people can really get their voices around it and harmonize on it so strongly. A faster song, it's harder to harmonize on. But when you've got these long sort of held notes, and people talk about being in churches down in the South during the Civil Rights Movement and just feeling like the roof was about to take off, you know, when people sang that song, that it was just so powerful to be in the center of that. And last of all, I think it's just, it's a hopeful song. For people who are facing violence, death, intimidation, hopelessness, it's a song that really says, we shall overcome.
What are the other key moments in its life? There was that first early singing at the Highland Center where it kind of took off. If you were to describe, I don't know, two or three pivotal moments in the life of the song, what would you choose?
Yes. Well, certainly it being sung at the March on Washington, you know, there where you had a huge number of people singing all together.
That's where Martin Luther King
exactly
Jr. gave the I Have a Dream speech. That's
exactly right.
And who sang it there?
Joan Baez sang it there. It may have actually been sung more than once. I'm not exactly sure, but there is a picture of her singing it. I think also that what's interesting to me is how the song was taken on by people around the world, not just the Tiananmen Square that I talked about, but how it became a number one hit in India at one point, and kind of a different language version, or how it was associated with the farm workers and how they would sing it in Spanish, different, you know, language, but still the same sentiment in a rough translation. So those kinds of things, I think, are key because the song has huge impact around the world. It's a song that in some ways may mean more to other cultures than it does to ours in terms of its immediate relevance.
Well, I associate the song largely with Pete Seeger. I'm not entirely sure why, but
he
sang
did,
it a
he
lot.
He did, and he had recorded the song. I believe it was when he made his Live at Carnegie Hall album is the one he was talking about. And then he went on a 9-month world tour with his family or something, you know, going to Australia and Africa and all that. And by the time he circled around to Europe, I don't know, 6 to 9 months after that album was released, he would start playing the song. And he said the concert halls would explode because people knew the song from his recording. He had passed the song that way.
And the process of working throughout the South and going to jail and getting beat and being in mass meetings and singing, there's one particular song that became the theme song of this movement. It is a powerful song. You can go anywhere in the world today where there is struggle, and you will find this song, and you will still see people in the streets marching and singing it. It is our gift to the world people in struggle. We want to ask you to stand up and cross your right hand over left and sing with us, We Shall Overcome.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. Lord, we shall overcome someday.
It's also probable that he changed the song from We Will Overcome to We Shall Overcome. He's a little bit uncertain himself, but he liked the openness of the shall versus will, you know. But it's not completely certain whether he's the one who did that or not.
For young people today who don't remember any of the civil rights movement protests, for whom this is all a page in their high school textbook, are there kind of, I don't know, word pictures you could paint of, you know, take yourself back, try to remember, what was it like, what would it have been like in 1963 and 1968 to be in Selma or Montgomery and hear people sing this song?
I was at the Smithsonian about 6 months ago, and I went to a little demonstration they were doing, and in this demonstration they had people sitting at a counter, like they would have been at the lunch counter, say. And all the rest of us in the audience came and just stood all around these people without saying a word. It was a graphic demonstration of what it meant to feel intimidated and threatened. I think if you put yourself in that position and think, what will help me if I want to face people who are opposing what I'm trying to do here? Singing becomes a way to do that, to sing together. This is the heart of the story, is that singing together helps people in very difficult times. Now, do young students in elementary or even high school know that? Probably not, because they don't have the experience of that. But you really, I don't believe, would have had the civil rights movement and all of its ability to maintain a nonviolent posture, for example, without this ability to also sing together. They go hand in hand. Now, most kids have seen pictures. They've seen Eyes on the Prize documentary or other pictures, you know, the police dogs or the water hoses, things like that. They've seen that. But what's missing in a way is not just the soundtrack, but what that soundtrack did for people. It wasn't just playing in the background. It was people actively making this music that literally fed their courage, their spirits, their souls, and their hope.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday.
Stuart Stotz is a writer and performer, and the author of We Shall Overcome, a song that changed the world. And Strange Champ spoke with him.